life that produces emotions and symbolic ideas. The academic psychologist is perfectly free to dismiss the phenomenon of emotion or the concept of the unconscious, or both, from his consideration. Yet they remain facts to which the medical psychologist at least has to pay due attention. For emotional conflicts and the intervention of the unconscious are the classical features of his science. If he treats a patient at all, he comes up against these irrationalities as hard facts, irrespective of his ability to formulate them in intellectual terms. It is therefore quite natural that people who have not had the medical psychologist's experience find it difficult to follow what happens when psychology ceases to be a tranquil pursuit for the scientist in his laboratory and becomes an active part of the adventure of real life. Target practice on a shooting range is far from a battlefield. The doctor has to deal with casualties in a genuine war. He must concern himself with psychic realities, even if he cannot embody them in scientific definitions. That is why no textbook can teach psychology. One learns only by actual experience. We can see this point clearly when we examine certain well-known symbols. The cross, in the Christian religion, for instance, is a meaningful symbol that expresses a multitude of aspects, ideas, and emotions. But a cross after a name on a list simply indicates that the individual is dead. The phallus functions as an all-embracing symbol in the Hindu religion, but if a street urchin draws one on a wall, it just reflects an interest in his penis. Because infantile and adolescent fantasies often continue far into adult life, many dreams occur in which there are unmistakable sexual allusions. It would be absurd to understand them as anything else. But when a mason speaks of monks and nuns to be laid upon each other, or an electrician of nail plugs and female sockets, it would be ludicrous to suppose that he is indulging in glowing adolescent fantasies. He is simply using colorful descriptive names for his materials. When an educated Hindu talks to you about the lingam, the phallus that represents the god Shiva in Hindu mythology, you will hear things we Westerns would never connect with the penis. The lingam is certainly not an obscene allusion, nor is the cross merely a sign of death. Much depends upon the maturity of the dreamer who produces such an image. The interpretation of dreams and symbols demands intelligence. It cannot be turned into a mechanical system and then crammed into unimaginative brains. It demands both an increasing knowledge of the dreamer's individuality and an increasing self-awareness on the part of the interpreter. No experienced worker in this field will deny that there are rules of thumb that can prove helpful, but they must be applied with prudence and intelligence. One may follow all the right rules and yet get bogged down in the most appalling nonsense, simply by overlooking a seemingly unimportant detail that a better intelligence would not have missed. Even a man of high intellect can go badly astray for lack of intuition or feeling. When we attempt to understand symbols, we are not only confronted with the symbol itself, but we are brought up against the wholeness of the symbol-producing individual. And in the process, one fills in many gaps in one's own education. I have made it a rule myself to consider every case as an entirely new proposition about which I do not even know the ABC. Routine responses may be practical and useful while one is dealing with the surface, but as soon as one gets in touch with the vital problems, life itself takes over, and even the most brilliant theoretical premises become ineffectual words. Imagination and intuition are vital to our understanding. And though the usual popular opinion is that they are chiefly valuable to poets and artists, that in sensible matters one should mistrust them, they are in fact equally vital in all the higher grades of science. Here they play an increasingly important role, which supplements that of the rational intellect and its application to a specific problem. Even physics, the strictest of all applied sciences, depends to an astonishing degree upon intuition, which works by way of the unconscious, although it is possible to demonstrate afterward the logical procedures that could have led one to the same result as intuition. Intuition is almost indispensable in the interpretation of symbols, and it can often ensure that they are immediately understood by the dreamer. But while such a lucky hunch may be subjectively convincing, it can also be rather dangerous. It can so easily lead to a false feeling of security. It may, for instance, seduce both the interpreter and the dreamer into continuing a cozy and relatively easy relation, which may end in a sort of mutual dream. The safe basis of real intellectual knowledge and moral understanding gets lost if one is content with the vague satisfaction of having understood by hunch. One can explain and know only if one has reduced intuitions to an exact knowledge of facts and their logical connections. An honest investigator will have to admit that he cannot always do this, but it would be dishonest not to keep it always in mind. Even a scientist is a human being, so it is natural for him, like others, to hate the things he cannot explain. It is a common illusion to believe that what we know today is all we ever can know. Nothing is scientific theory, which is an ephemeral attempt to explain facts, and not an everlasting truth in itself. The role of symbols. When the medical psychologist takes an interest in symbols, he is primarily concerned with natural symbols, as distinct from cultural symbols. The former are derived from the unconscious contents of the psyche, and they therefore represent an enormous number of variations on the essential archetypal images. In many cases, they can still be traced back to their archaic roots, that is, to ideas and images that we meet in the most ancient records and in primitive societies. The culture used to express eternal truths, and that are still used in many religions. They have gone through many transformations and even a long process of more or less conscious development, and have thus become collective images accepted by civilized societies. Such cultural symbols, nevertheless, retain much of their original numinosity or spell. One is aware that they can evoke a deep emotional response in some individuals, and this psychic charge makes them function in much the same way as prejudices. They are a factor with which the psychologist must reckon. It is folly to dismiss them because in rational terms they seem to be absurd or irrelevant. They are important constituents of our mental makeup and vital forces in the building up of human society, and they cannot be eradicated without serious loss. Where they are repressed or neglected, their specific energy disappears into the unconscious with unaccountable consequences. The psychic energy that appears to have been lost in this way, in fact, serves to revive and intensify whatever is uppermost in the unconscious. Tendencies, perhaps, that have hitherto had no chance to express themselves, or at least have not been allowed an uninhibited existence in our consciousness. Such tendencies form an ever-present and potentially destructive shadow to our conscious mind. Even tendencies that might in some circumstances be able to exert a beneficial influence are transformed into demons when they are repressed. This is why many well-meaning people are understandably afraid of the unconscious, and incidentally of psychology. Modern man does not understand how much his rationalism, which has destroyed his capacity to respond to numinous symbols and ideas, has put him at the mercy of the psychic underworld. He has freed himself from superstition, or so he believes, but in the process he has lost his spiritual values to a positively dangerous degree. His moral and spiritual tradition has disintegrated, and he is now paying the price for this breakup in worldwide disorientation and dissociation. Anthropologists have often described what happens to a primitive society when its spiritual values are exposed to the impact of modern civilization. Its people lose the meaning of their lives, their social organization disintegrates, and they themselves morally decay. We are now in the same condition, but we have never really understood what we have lost. For our spiritual leaders, unfortunately, were more interested in protecting their institutions than in understanding the mystery that symbols present. In my opinion, faith does not exclude thought, which is man's strongest weapon. But unfortunately, many believers seem to be so afraid of science, and incidentally of psychology, that they turn a blind eye to the numinous psychic powers that forever control man's fate. We have stripped all things of their mystery and numinosity. Nothing is holy any longer. In earlier ages, as instinctive concepts welled up in the mind of man, his conscious mind could no doubt integrate them into a coherent psychic pattern. But the civilized man is no longer able to do this. his advanced consciousness has deprived itself of the means by which the auxiliary contributions of the instincts and the unconscious can be assimilated.